Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Bears decided to end its 18-year association with Bourbonnais and move training camp away from Olivet Nazarene University back to Hallis Hall. Should the Bears have thought more about their fans when making this decision to stage more secluded preseason? Or will people understand because this helps them prepare better for the season?
Yeah, I guess people will understand. If indeed the Bears do better, then why would anyone really care whether they got to see a training camp practice or not? I have a lot of thoughts on this, and I got to be honest with you, I had like a flood of memories when I thought about the Bears leaving Bourbonnais. I had a flood of memories about Platteville and all the years I spent of my life wasted in Platteville. And I've never gone back to Platteville. I'm curious to see whether I go back to Bourbonnais. Not sure that there's a scenario. Not sure that I'd be down in the area.
College visit?
I guess. Am I going to a college visit?
I don't know. I'm just saying. That'd be one reason you would go there.
Okay. That would be TJ's. A reason I'd go to Platteville. TJ's. Maybe just
happy
go down.
Hour.
Steak and Shake.
Yeah. If I'm driving that way, if you're driving down to U of I, stop and gas up. I got a lot of nostalgia for stuff. It's always good to see, but there was always a thought about them moving back to Hallis Hall. And as you said, there are a lot of teams in the league have already done that. And once you see them working on the facility, I think it's fine. You know, the reason they wound up there is they cut a deal when they put the new stadium up that they would move back from Wisconsin to Illinois. And I believe the then governor was located in that area. So they moved there. And I think that that's all part of kind of the politics of the whole thing.
George Ryan and Kinky Key and that whole history. Right?
Now they're allowed to go back home.
Yeah. Well, they better win. And I think that's one of the things that puts more pressure on them. Obviously, they're doing this for a lot of reasons, but economic, strategic, and you can justify it because the rest of the league has gone this direction. It just widens the gap between the millionaire football player and the fan that wants to get closer to that football player and the favorite team. So there's got to be a recognition of that, and I think the Bears have to be a little more cognizant of their maybe public responsibility. This is going to be something that disappoints a lot of people. There's a lot of nostalgia involved. It's sports. I mean, it's tradition. These are the kind of emotions you want to elicit if you're a professional sports team. So they're changing the narrative. They're changing the experience for a lot of people. I don't think they're going to be able to duplicate it at Hallis Hall, no matter how hard they try. No matter how much they tell us, on their website or how many different videos they want to cut, this is not going to be the same thing. It's not going to be the same experience. So I understand it. It's a sign of the times. It's not a move in the right direction necessarily, because there's going to be a lot of fans, even if you're talking about between 40 and 80,000 fans per summer. Those are people that are going to be deprived of an opportunity, to have a meaningful experience. But that's the price of playing poker in the NFL these days, and this is just one of those realities.
Okay, I get why this is a story. 18 years, a long time. It's a kind of a drastic move in terms of not only the locale, but the access that the fans will get to the team. But I don't care. I've been to Bourbonnais before. I've never been to Hallis Hall. I imagine that the...
Wow.
What?
I don't know. It's hard to imagine that.
Well, what business would I have there? I'm not a reporter.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
I'm just a handsome man with a great set of pipes. I'm not going there to break stories or anything like that. I mean, I know my place in this realm. I don't think that they should have thought more about it. It makes sense. It's an economic decision. It's the way the league is going, David, is the way you brought up. Will people understand? I think that part of this question kind of sticks out to me. People in general don't really understand much these days, so I think people will probably not understand why they're doing this. There will be a collective of people that are upset about it and not, you know, cognizant to the fact of what they're trying to achieve here. And if they win, non-story, and we forget about it all very quickly. If they don't win, I'm sure somebody will figure out a way to thread this back. Like, oh, well, if they were back in Bourbonnais, then maybe they, you know, blah, blah, blah. But to me, good riddance, Bourbonnais. Bye.
Well, in my estimation, anytime you close off access to fans, that's a loss. It's a loss for the fan base, and that sucks for the fan base. However, this is one of those things that, you know, people are going to remember going there and, you know, recount their memories and things like that. And as the years go on, it's just one of those things that's going to fade away. People will get used to it. People won't like it right now. But people, if they don't understand now, eventually they will. It will be, it's one of those things that with time will be forgotten and forgiven, especially if they are successful. That would be a big key to that.
Well, I typically like to jump right down the throats of people that make bad decisions, but I have to take my foot off the gas a little bit only because until we know exactly what the plan is, how many open practices, will there be autographs, will there be fan interact, like how close, when you get to go to the practice up at Halas Hall, how close can you get to the team like you were able to get at Bourbonnais? We don't know, right?
No matter how good it is, Dustin, there's not going to be 7,000 people at a practice at Halas Hall.
Well, I don't think they could even accommodate.
I know, that's right? What I mean.
Okay, you couldn't even accommodate
but
that.
But any given Saturday morning, right. you could find 7,000 fans right. outside
no
Bourbonnais.
No matter how good or bad. Now, here's the question, okay? Are Bears fans going to not watch the Bears on television? Are they not going to buy merch? Are they not going to wear their swag to work on Fridays or school on Friday or Monday when during Bears season? I mean, that's how you test it. I was shocked last year. I saw that the Philadelphia Eagles had one open practice to the fans last year at their training facility wherever yep. that is. Okay. And I'm guessing that the Philadelphia Eagles fans are as rabid and as nasty and as obnoxious as ever. Right. So, again, you've all pointed out if they win, it's a non-factor. It's a non-story. Right. But if they're losing, even if they were at Bourbonnais because you got an autograph and got to maybe take a picture with the 15th offensive lineman, you're still a Bears fan. I feel bad for Bourbonnais. I said to you this morning, David, I was shocked. I thought they had just recently signed a new agreement. And Mully's so right. Like, I haven't been down there for 18 years, but over the last decade since I've been here and even going before as a fan, I mean, that place has transformed like unbelievable. And I'm talking about Olivet Nazarene University. It's crazy how different the campus looks. So you get the flood of memories and all that kind of thing. I thought it was crazy when they left Platteville because I had gone up there as a fan and had so many fun experiences. So we'll wait and see. It's just part of today. It's just the new NFL. So we'll have to wait and see. Is there any good restaurants or bars up by the new Halas Hall?
Costco.
Oh, so you can get the $1.50 hot dog and Costco nonstop spots. Fountain drink. Yep. Okay, I'm in.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
Get the free samples, wander around the store.
See, I can't, this is for a later segment. I can't believe, knowing all the things I know about you, I can't believe you would take a free sample.
Let me tell you something.
I can't believe it. It shocks me.
I got through college.
I feel the opposite.
By going to Dominic's. Really? Yeah.
That's different. You're not in college anymore. Either
Dude,
am I.
You
okay?
Know.
And I think about that Gordon Ramsay, something else you and I enjoy, Gordon Ramsay and Donkey and all that, yeah. when the guy shows up and he's, you know, use a cocktail stick.
Yeah, that's
okay,
funny.
That whole thing. So that's why I'm shocked that you would have a sample.
I don't think you really know me. I think you know a version of me, not the actual, you know, where I grew up, how I got here kind of deal.
You don't know how hungry he gets.
You don't know. Yeah. They
it's
all
angry.
Everyone speaks of my drinking, but never my thirst.
Wow, very tough question. Very, very hard.
What message are the Twins sending by signing 34-year-old Josh Donaldson to a 4-year, $92 million deal? Are you surprised to learn it's the second largest deal ever to a player aged 33 or over?
That's a little surprising. Did not know that bit of trivia. I think that says a lot about him and their belief that he can sustain this. I think it says the Twins are paying attention. You look around that division, they know what the White Sox have done this offseason. They know the White Sox have invested $200 million in contracts to make themselves a viable contender in the American League Central. They know the Indians are still there. And they know that the Twins, if they're not going to have a pitching rotation, and I guess if you look at their pitching rotation with Homer Bailey and Rich Hill, yes, they added veterans, but they added veterans who I don't think are going to have as great of a season as maybe Josh Donaldson's going to have. So this is the way they're going to try to win again, is they're going to be mashers. They're going to be hitting the ball out of the ballpark, and they are serious about defending their division crown. So this is a message to everyone else that they plan to stick around for a while. Good signing for them. As we mentioned, it has implications on both sides of town in Chicago. And congratulations to Josh Donaldson, because he played this perfectly from a free agent perspective.
Yeah, he's making the same amount of money that he made. It's just he also has years to go with that. So that's good for him indeed. I think this sends two messages. I think the first is that the Twins are serious about winning now, because you don't sign a guy at that age for that length of period unless you want to win right now. And I think that effectively they could get two good years out of him, and they're willing to pay for four to get the two. I think the other thing that it says is that maybe they even understand that if the baseball changes, the bashing is over. So they needed to go out and get a guy that they felt could hit home runs even if the ball isn't juiced. So I think that it's twofold. I think, one, they want to win in the immediate moment. Two, they want to keep hitting home runs even if their advantage is erased.
Well, I don't know what message they're sending. I mean, they're signing a great player and a veteran and a guy who, when he's healthy, is one of the best third basemen in all of baseball, despite his age. I mean, a lot of people thought he was washed up. He was on the way down after what how his tenure in Toronto ended. People thought maybe he had reached the end of that run. He revitalized himself last year with a great season in Atlanta, not only hitting 37 home runs, but playing some good defense as well for a relative senior citizen. The Minnesota's, they had a great offense last season. They're going to have a great offense again. It's dependent on which baseball they're going to be using, and I don't want to sound too much like Dan Bernstein, who could do a whole week's worth of shows on laces on a baseball and everything, and it would be riveting. But it's going to be very, very important to see if the balls are flying out of ballparks at the same rate that they were last year. If they're not, Minnesota is not going to be as potent of a team, because, David, as you brought up, I don't trust their pitching rotation. The depth there, 1 through 5, is not great, and I don't know if they're not scoring a ton of runs and hitting a ton of home runs, I think it's going to be hard for them to compete. But this is a great signing for them, and I think they will score plenty of runs. I did not feel great when I saw this news come across Twitter yesterday. I'll say that I kind of was thinking, damn, I wish he would have signed with Washington or somewhere else where I don't have to see him 20 times a year, because I have a feeling he's gonna hurt the Sox. He's gonna hurt everybody in that division.
I agree, Kevin. This is less, I think, about what message the Twins are sending, and it's more about the message that Donaldson sent to the league last year. I mean, he had a couple of injury-plagued seasons the past couple of years, and then he goes and signs with Atlanta and hits 259, 37 home runs, 94 RBIs in 155 games, showing that he can still contribute when healthy and that he is healthy now. And what message are the Twins sending? I mean, they're buying in on Donaldson. They think he'll fit right into their power lineup like he did in Atlanta with Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna Jr. They think this guy is going to be a big factor, and I'd have to agree. So I guess I'm not so surprised, because you see that this guy, what this guy can do when he is healthy, and he still has a lot to give.
Yeah, the good news is I think this is a reaction to what the White Sox have done this offseason. I think the Twins are worried that the White Sox are actually a team to contend with. And, okay, so you're going to do this? Well, I guess we better do something. Okay, that's what I find incredibly interesting with this, is that all of a sudden the Sox are shaking up the rest of the teams in the AL Central. Kampka tweeted out some unbelievable numbers, as he always does. 2015 to present, 30 games. slash line, 370, 496, 800, 12 home runs, 26 walks, 10 strikeouts. Also, Donaldson is the only player since 1970 with a five-game home run streak against the White Sox, and he's done that twice. So that's bad news. You know what you do with a guy like that? Four fingers, okay? Go ahead. Go stand on first base, and we'll deal with the rest of you. That's how I would do it, but that's not a...
Former Cub, Josh Donaldson, right?
Former Cub farmhand.
Okay. Yeah. Former Cub.
Former Smokey, maybe. I don't know if he actually made it up to the Cub level.
This is sort of a trick question.
The Cardinals and Rockies have reportedly started exchanging players' names in advance of a Nolan Arenado deal. Is this a dangerous turn of events for the Cubs, and should they try to do something about it?
Listen, Nolan Arenado makes them so much better, the Cardinals, that the Cubs... You know, this is worrisome. And I get it. I get it. The Cubs haven't started yet. We haven't seen what they're going to look like next year. But if the Cardinals are going to look like they're going to look, how are the Cubs possibly going to be able to counter that if they're trading for younger players, if they're trading for future stars, but not immediate help? So I think it's a very dangerous turn of events for the Cubs. I think they should sit up and take notice, and I think that they should try to do something about it. If you're not going to have Chris Bryant manning third base, wouldn't you want Nolan Arenado? Is there a way that they can pull off something like that? And the problem is that everybody knows that the Cubs' number one goal is to get below the luxury tax rate. So the idea of going over it in order to get back down, it just seems a little dodgy. I'm not sure they're going to go along with the program. But no, if I were the Cubs, I would sit up and take notice. And if I were a Cub fan, I'd be nervous hearing this information.
Well, I'd be nervous anyway, because this offseason has provided nothing but anxiety if you're a Cubs fan. Nolan Arenado going to the Cardinals is going to be a problem not only for 2020 but beyond, because you look at his contract and you look at him at third base with Goldschmidt at first base, and boy, the Cardinals look like they're going to be solid. And they have put themselves in a position to have these kind of conversations, to exchange names. They've got the prospects now after their deal last week, and they've got the capital to exchange with the Rockies that the Cubs just don't have. So if you're a Cubs fan, you're probably more fixated or focused on the fact that Josh Donaldson signing with the Twins makes Chris Bryant more tradable. And you're likely to, as we have been discussing throughout the course of the offseason, you're either running in place or taking a step back in 2020. You're likely going to be exchanging Chris Bryant for a slew of prospects that may or may not fit what he's worth. I don't like that idea, and I'm certainly not promoting that idea, but I think that is going to be the inevitability that the Cubs are facing once you get the results of the grievance. As for the Cardinals, you're not going to be in a position potentially to compete with them if Arenado goes to St. Louis. So the pecking order is being established. You don't like it, but I think that's what you're facing if you're a Cubs fan.
Josh Donaldson played for the Peoria Chiefs single A Cubs affiliate. That was the highest level he reached before he was...
Never got to the Smokies. Never a Smokey.
Former Chief. And then he was part of the Rich Harden deal. Okay. I think we all remember. In regards to Nolan Arenado, the Cardinals have the money, they have the players to send back to Colorado. This is looking more and more inevitable by the day, and that is awful news for the Cubs, for the Brewers, for the Cincinnati Reds. Pittsburgh's irrelevant, but those other teams that actually think they have a shot and do have a shot over the next couple of years, if Nolan Arenado ends up on a Cardinals team that was already very good last season, that has a legitimate ace in Jack Flaherty and has a lot of good players that are able to hit the ball as well, it's going to give the Cardinals a real grasp on this division, I think, for a long time. As far as what the Cubs should try to do about it, what can they do? Legitimately, I'm asking, guys, what could the Cubs do to stop the Rockies and Cardinals from making a trade?
Make a better offer to the Rockies? But I don't think they're in a position to do that.
I think they could if they wanted to. They have the money to do it. They just choose not to. They won their World Series and they're cashing out. They don't want to put any more resources in the team. That's where they are right now. They could sign Nolan Arenado. They could trade for anybody they wanted. They could have a $500 million payroll. They just don't want to do it.
Yeah, where they are is an awkward position to be in, especially seeing this move with this whole Chris Bryant situation. It kind of leaves them in a position where I agree, Kevin. What can you do if you don't have everything solidified with Chris Bryant? I'm sure the Cubs don't want to let Chris Bryant go and would like to have him on the team for life if they can work something out, but they're not at that point yet. So I don't know at the moment. I don't believe there's anything they can do to circumvent this from happening. That being said, I mean, if this deal goes through and Arenado goes to the Rockies, Arenado goes to the Cardinals, this is trouble for the Cubs, big trouble, because they added Paul Goldschmidt last year, and this is just going to be another powerful bat to that lineup. And I know there was a long stretch last season where Goldschmidt's bat was quiet. You can't expect that to happen for two seasons in a row. And if this addition happens to the Cardinals, this is going to be dangerous.
I don't think that the exchanging of names is necessarily a dangerous sort of events. I think we knew that that was a possibility and out there. When and if that happens, that's a dangerous turn of events, a very dangerous turn of events if you cheer for the team at Clark and Addison. Now, what can the Cubs do? Right, Kevin, make a better deal, eat more of the money, ask for less from the Atlanta Braves, if that's actually something going on, that the Braves and Cubs have talked about names and dollars for Chris Bryant to head down south. So it's troubling. It doesn't feel great right now, but this was the first of two dominoes. Donaldson signing, and then we need to find out where the Cubs and Major League Baseball are on the Chris Bryant grievance, and then it's really going to be DEFCON 4.
I don't quite get the question.
Alex Cora and the Red Sox parted ways before Major League Baseball punished him in the sign-stealing scandal. What's your best guess of his penalty? And should the Mets follow suit and preemptively fire new manager Carlos Beltran, even though he was a former Astros player, implicated and unlikely to face MLB discipline?
Well, I think with Cora, probably 2 years would be my best guess. He's going to be more severe penalty than A.J. Hinch and Lunau, because I think he carried that system to Boston, and he has, you know, two different teams that he infected with the cheating. And there's going to be a more severe penalty, and the Red Sox tried to get in front of that. As for Beltran, I think it's interesting dilemma, because he was a player when this happened, and now he's a manager. But what did he tell the Mets? Did he tell the Mets that this was something that came up during the interview process, and he alluded to it by saying it was just video scouting and this is what everybody did, and he just found an edge the way that he always has found an edge throughout his career to guess pitches correctly? Did he tell them that he, you know, to what degree did he try to hide the truth or fabricate a version of the truth that just wasn't so, that maybe implicates him as a fraud or as a liar in the report to Rob Manfred? So that to me is something we don't know. But if I were the Mets, I would be very concerned, because this isn't going away. It also underscores how the players in this whole process are the ones who are protected for whatever reason. I understand the immunity. I understand they would not get the information without granting that. But Carlos Beltran not getting punished as a result of this, being the only player named, seems kind of hypocritical to me. So if I'm the Mets front office, I have some really serious concerns that I need to get to the bottom of. And I would be leaning today, as I wake up this Wednesday morning, more toward firing him than keeping him.
I think you're absolutely right. Is he a liar? Did he lie to them to get the job? I mean, use the word. I go back to the day that they hired him. They said they brought him in. The Mets GM is Brody Van Wagenen, and he said that Beltran is all about taking it a step further. He's all about tips and little things. And he said, we can trust Carlos. And that goes a long way. If you can't trust him, did they know this report was going to come up? Did they know this embarrassment was going to come up? Did they know that this was now going to be a question that was going to have to be asked of him at every turn? And he's lied publicly about it. If you listen to what he said about this stuff when asked about it, I mean, A.J. Hinch was asked about it. He lied publicly about it. And I think that that's the problem, that once you are on the record lying about this sort of thing. And you know, Alex Cora's name was mentioned 11 times in Manfred's report. When your name is there and it's, yes, he was doing this. When Carlos Beltran, I know he's a player and you can't punish players. Not a player anymore.
Right.
So I don't know that Major League Baseball is coming after him. But I think that it's the dishonesty about it.
Is it a lie if they really truly believe it to be true? You know what I mean?
If they believe that all I did was the little things,
you think that they have convinced themselves that they're not lying?
It's still a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they're convincing themselves that they didn't cheat, they're cheaters.
I think Alex Cora will be suspended for two years, a long time.
Somebody said 5 years yesterday. I don't think it'll go that far because he cheated one place and then he went to another.
Two years.
I think that's minimum 2 years.
Yeah, he might, you know, have a lot of this fall on him as one of the masterminds of the operation because he did it in multiple locations. So I think it's going to be at least 2 years for Alex Cora. As far as Carlos Beltran goes, you know, the fact that he was a player when it happened and he's been removed from the situation now for a couple of years, I think this is going to quietly go away, be swept under the rug a little bit. I mean, it is the Mets. Nobody really gives a damn about the New York Mets at all. So I think people are just going to try.
They're in the number one media market in America.
Yeah, but
Nobody cares about the Mets?
It's the Mets. This is the third largest media market. Nobody cares about the White Sox either. I mean, it's just a...
Boy, you are such a Sox fan.
At first blush, my reaction is, you know, just give a lifetime ban to Alex Cora because not only is he the main player in the Astros scandal, and then he went and did it at another team with the Red Sox, but I understand that may be over the top. So a multi-year suspension is deserving. Maybe 2 years is appropriate. Definitely more than 1 year. In terms of Carlos Beltran, yeah, he should lose his job, and he should also get something similar to A.J. Hinch, 1 year.
I was the one that said 5 years, and I think the only thing that's going to save his backside right now is that they acted, air quotes, swiftly, right? They didn't dig their heels in and try to protect him, meaning the Red Sox, and Cora didn't try to, well, you know, we disagree with the findings. We want another investigation. We're going to dig in. Baseball's got to tell us what to do. You know, they parted company amicably. You know, BS. But here's the problem with Carlos Beltran. Beltran in November told the New York Post that they stole signs organically and legally. And I'm quoting, "I am not aware of that camera. We were studying the opposite team every single day." So these are the problem is it's the lying, right? It's bad form, that's the wrong answer. You're also going out of your way now as the manager to lie about what you did and your involvement in it. And I think that's what's going to end up biting him in the backside.
That is an unbelievably great question.
Caesars released its first win totals for the 2020 baseball season. It has the White Sox at 84.5 and the Cubs at 86. With the Sox offseason all but over and the Cubs yet to really start, what is your first guess at the over-under for each team?
Yeah, I think the Sox are going to be over 84.5 wins. I mean, I think they win 74 games last year. I think they're more than 10 games better. So I'm going to go over. Again, these lines are established to encourage gambling.
Yeah.
So they want you, if you're a Sox fan, they want you to go over. If you're a Cubs fan, they want you to go over, just based on a quick read of this thing. I think the Cubs are going to be under. I think the Sox are going to be over. The 84.5 Sox over, 86 Cubs under.
I would come to the same conclusion for the same reasons. I mean, the White Sox, they're going to be closer to 90 wins than 80, you got to think, with the way that they have rebuilt their pitching staff and added to their offense. And the Cubs, well, what have the Cubs done to add to their 84-win team? They have not really done anything yet, and you get the sense that they're only going to get younger by making some deals. So I would go under 86.
I think with the White Sox, you know, there's a lot of optimism and a lot of excitement because they have been very aggressive, and they do have a lot of good young players that are already there or that are coming up through the minors and will be here soon. But I just think there's too many variables, too many unknowns, too many things that have to go right for the White Sox to win 85, 86 games, like the number indicates here. So I'm going to have to go over there tentatively. Hope I'm wrong.
You mean under?
Under 84.5.
Yeah.
Is that?
That's an under.
Okay.
Good. That's not over.
It's early. As far as the Cubs go, the number at 86, what on earth? What, they went 84 last year? How are they going to be better than they were last year? Losing Nick Castellanos, losing Cole Hamels, potentially losing Chris Bryant or Wilson Contreras, having a 2 through 5 in your rotation of 50-year-old John Lester, Yu Darvish, you never know what you're going to get from him, Quintana, and Tyler Chatwood penciled in right now as the fifth starter. How the hell is this team supposed to win 86 games? Way, way, way under.
You look at this winter the White Sox are having, all they've done to add to this team, you got to say the over. So I'm saying over. I mean, yeah, 2019 Cubs were an 84-win team, and they have not done a damn thing to improve. So on the under is what I'm taking on the Cubs.
Well, both these numbers initially screamed to me that you would go over on the White Sox and you would go under on the Cubs. Let's also keep in mind that the Tennessee Titans were a double-digit underdog on Saturday night, and not only did they cover, they won the game outright. So those big casinos with the bright lights and lots of fancy rooms and free cocktails weren't just imagined upon. It wasn't just a poof, puff the magic dragon type of thing. These guys know what they're doing, and Mully, you're right. These numbers are set to encourage people to bet. There's also a lot of Chicago, air quote, money that gets placed on these teams, okay? And until I know for a fact that David Bodie is going to be the everyday, sorry, David, starting third baseman for the Cubs, okay, the 86 seems just about right, give or take.
It's a resurgent year for Bodie.
Okay, listen, David Bodie can't be the everyday starting third baseman if you think that team's going to win 86
games. Iowa Cubs are going to have a big year.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.